Fairy Tale of New York, which is probably the Pogues' best known song in the United States. And, just a stone cold classic. I mean, truly one of the great, great songs of the last 50 years. Although we could put lots of Shane's songs in that category. So people, I think, know about them from maybe they saw them first time around. Like I was fortunate enough to do, Fairy Tale of New York has kept them on folks' radar. And I do hope that this exhibition reawakens that love and appreciation for this band, who were so vital during their long career and whose influence continues to stretch. You hear bands like Flogging Molly or Dropkick Murphys. I mean, even Springsteen at times, who is an avowed Shane McGowan fan.
That was Stephen Jenkins of the Bob Dylan Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hello, and welcome to episode 85 of the Irish Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Becker. Stephen is going to be my guest on the show today. We'll start by talking about the center's current exhibit on the Pogues, and specifically the band's leader, the late Shane McGowan. The exhibit runs through May 12th and is titled They Gave the Walls a Talking. Our conversation will last more than one episode and will also cover Bob Dylan's love of Irish music, Ireland, and even into a little bit of Dylan's love for baseball. Right now, let's welcome Stephen Jenkins of the Bob Dylan Center. Thanks for being here, Stephen.
Rick, it is my pleasure. Very happy to be here.
So the first thing I want to talk about, because this is the Irish Baseball Podcast, and we're going to focus on Ireland at the beginning, is this exhibit that you have going on right now about the Pogues. And obviously, we lost the lead singer of the Pogues very recently, and this is the perfect time to celebrate this band that meant a lot to a lot of people. So what's going on with the exhibit? And if you could talk about their influence in general as well.
Sure thing. Yeah, I agree with you that the time is right. It's bittersweet in that, as you mentioned, Shane McGowan, the chief singer-songwriter for the Pogues for so many years, passed away in November. This exhibition was underway, however, with his knowledge and participation, of course, prior to his passing. And it opened initially at a museum in Dublin, quite fittingly, where it should have, Shane's town and the home base for the Pogues for so much of their time. They actually split their time a lot between London and then back into Ireland. But this was at Epic, which is the emigration museum in Dublin, very, renowned institution. And we got word here at the Bob Dylan Center, we're in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that this exhibition was going up. We all happen to be big Pogues fans here. Our mission, as I can talk about a little later, is centered all around Bob Dylan, but we're very interested in all sorts of music and in all sorts of musical artists. Shane McGowan, in the top tier of a lot of folks here on staff, personally, and just also recognizing his cultural import. So our managing director of American Song Archives, that's the organization that runs both the Bob Dylan Center and our neighboring Woody Guthrie Center, he went out to Dublin to take a look at this show. And by the end of his trip, he had essentially struck a deal with the curator of the show to bring that exhibition to the United States, more specifically here to the Bob Dylan Center. The curator's name is Niall Stokes. He, in addition to being a curator for this exhibition, he has been the publisher and editor of Hot Press magazine since 1977. It's almost like the Irish Rolling Stone, if you will, in terms of its status as the music magazine of note. So Niall really knows his Irish music history, steeped in the Pogues, and put together a beautiful exhibition. On top of that, Steve Higgins, again, who I mentioned earlier, who went out to get the show for us, he connected with Victoria Mary Clark. Victoria and Shane had been partners for 40 years and were married. And, Victoria was with Shane through the ups and downs of his tumultuous life and his thrilling career. And Victoria became involved with us and loved the idea of having the Pogues and Shane McGowan be on display and exhibited and celebrated here at the Dillon Center. So she unearthed some real gems from their personal archive. Victoria was the keeper of Shane's every handwritten lyric and artwork. He was a nonstop producer of art. And so when he wasn't writing lyrics, he was making drawings on any stray piece of paper, on objects such as a cigar box or a hurling stick. And Victoria said, well, what if we add some of these items to the exhibition as it had been displayed in Dublin, and we'll do something extra special for its display in Tulsa. So we have pieces here that had never before been exhibited that are really as private and personal from Shane's collection as you can get. The exhibition will run through May 12th, and it really is a trove of treasures for every Pogues fan. And I think for folks who aren't as familiar with their music, they'll be very pleasantly surprised.
I think that's where I'm hoping this exhibit really has the biggest impact on people who maybe weren't fans of the Pogues or, just heard them around Christmas time, and maybe it can get them to look a little deeper into their music. Because what type of impact would you say they've had here in the States? Because I think we know that they had a huge impact across the pond, but over here, maybe they weren't quite as big. Do you think that this exhibit could help change that a little bit? Or do you think that since his passing, it really has already started, that people have started to delve a little bit more into their music?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of those. And, I can speak from experience, and I'll show my age, because I was fortunate enough to see the Pogues several times in concert when they finally made it over to the States. They were they were splashed on the cover of every music magazine in the UK. And this, of course, is pre-internet. We're talking the mid-1980s, when you had to wait for the import copies of New Music Express and the other magazines coming out of London to really get clued in as to what was happening in the music scene there. So we knew about the Pogues, the albums were released. The second one in particular, called with the memorable title Rum, Sodomy, and the Lash, that was produced by Elvis Costello. I personally was a huge Elvis fan, so I would sort of follow anything he was working on. And that led me to the Pogues, this band that he had, he was championing in all the newspapers, and produced their album. And then they came to tour, and I saw them in the mid-1980s, mid to late 80s, in Los Angeles two times, and then in San Francisco for a third performance. And those were jam-packed shows, at least on the West Coast, and I think that was the case on the East Coast too, particularly once, you mentioned We All Listen at Christmas Time, and I think you're referring to Fairy Tale of New York, which is probably the Pogues' best-known song in the United States. And, just a stone-cold classic. I mean, truly one of the great, great songs of the last 50 years, although we could put lots of Shane's songs in that category. So people, I think, know about them from maybe they saw them first time around, like I was fortunate enough to do. Fairy Tale of New York has kept them on folks' radar. And I do hope that this exhibition reawakens that love and appreciation for this band, who were so vital during their long career and whose influence continues to stretch. You hear bands like Flogging Molly or Dropkick Murphys. Even Springsteen at times, who is an avowed Shane McGowan fan, will incorporate the tin whistle or the other traditional Irish instruments into their sound. So I think that merging of traditional Irish music with a kind of punk spirit that Shane McGowan and the band brought to that tradition in many ways is alive and well. And it's great to be able to go back to the source of all of that with this show here at the Dillon Center.
So now I want to get to the Dillon Center more broadly and a lot of the mission to what you're doing there. Because unlike a lot of museums similar to this, a lot of centers similar to the Bob Dylan Center, like right next door, you have the Woody Guthrie Center. Woody Guthrie hasn't been with us for quite some time. Bob Dylan played here last month. So,
yeah.
So it's a little unique to have something like the Bob Dylan Center celebrating this artist who is still on the road touring. So does that present any issues because you're almost already memorializing somebody who is still very, very active?
Yeah, Rick, I think that's a really interesting point to raise because, as you say, it's unusual, highly unusual, to have a center of this sort dedicated to a living artist. You know, this isn't the case of Van Gogh, whose genius wasn't recognized until, you know, 100 years after his passing, or, you know, any similar story within the annals of art history. But, you know, we're talking about legacy artists within the rock and roll tradition. And we're very fortunate that so many of them are still with us. You know, I put Dylan in a club of one. I mean, he really stands alone, I think, and merits this kind of deep dive into his life and work. But, you know, as a way of answering that, you know, this all happened with Dylan's blessing. Essentially, the story is he had been keeping things. Fortunately, he had the wherewithal to hold on, like Shane McGowan did. Thanks, in Shane's case, thanks to his lovely wife, Victoria, who was sort of a keeper. Otherwise, who knows what would have happened to Shane's stuff. He was prone to tossing things in the trash and Victoria would go rescue them. Dylan, on the other hand, did seem to have the wherewithal to keep these things, not in a proper archival way, but at least tossing things in desk drawers or in cardboard boxes. So these are handwritten lyrics to, you know, name your favorite Dylan masterpiece, to photographs, home movie footage, recordings, of course, musical instruments, ephemera, notebooks, journals, all the rest of it. And it had really been building up. And by 2016, this was numbering in the tens of thousands of items. I mean, really around 100,000 when all was said and done. And so Dylan and his camp, he has a few folks who he has worked very closely with over decades. They decided that they wanted to find a permanent home for this collection. And they heard that our organization had opened the Guthrie Center. As you mentioned, by that point, the Guthrie Center had been open about 3 years. Woody Guthrie was undoubtedly Bob Dylan's number one formative influence. Dylan has spoken lovingly of hearing Guthrie's music, and just that was the mind-expanding, door-opening moment for him. So Dylan was intrigued by the fact that there was such a thing as Woody Guthrie Center and that it was here in Tulsa. He and his folks came out to take a look. They were apparently impressed with what they saw. They liked the vibe of Tulsa. Dylan mentioned that the fact that this is Native American land resonated with him. And for, you know, whatever other reason that Dylan might have, and it's, as I often say, it's a bit of a fool's errand to try to, you know, second guess his reasoning. But to our great good fortune, he said, okay, you know what, Tulsa it is. I really like the idea of my collection finding a permanent home here, and I'll leave you guys to it. You do the work. I'll send the material, but I'm not going to be involved. I won't come to the opening. I'm not going to shake hands with your donors, et cetera, et cetera. Not terribly surprising, given everything we know about Dylan and the way that he has maintained his privacy, you know, for as much as he gives us through his art and being on stage so often. He really draws a line, and kudos to him for doing so. So the material arrived. It took us, you know, a few years to get everything in order to open the center to the public. We opened in May of 2022, so we're coming up on almost 2 years, and we have the freedom to display the materials as best we see fit. We don't have to check in with Mr. Dylan on each and every exhibition. Or any of them, really. He has not been here. He's played in town at the Tulsa Theater, which is just a hop, skip, and jump away, but has not been in. This is all is sort of in keeping with his ethos, which we entirely respect. But it allows us to hopefully steward this collection and display the artifacts in a spirit that is befitting this artist who, as he himself says, contains multitudes.
Throughout his history of being honored by people and having things like the Bob Dylan Center, he sometimes seems like the least humble man in the history of time. He doesn't seem to want the praise, but like you said, he did save everything. He does put it out there. He understands his role, his importance, but I don't think he likes being there, having people telling him how important he is to everyone.
Well, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And there is a bit of a paradox there that I find fascinating, which is, you know, there was a documentary made about Bob Dylan in the mid-1960s called Don't Look Back. And that's by the documentarian D.A. Penbaker. And I think, consciously or not, Dylan has so often espoused that philosophy. You know, it's about the next song, the next show, the next painting. You know, he's a very prodigious artist, a visual artist. And yet, you're right. He held on to stuff. Now, I guess when you get a holiday card from John and Yoko, no matter who you are, you know that that's something that you should save. As one example among, you know, any number of hundreds or thousands I could name of really unique items here. But it's the handwritten lyrics, the crossouts, the marginalia, the revisions, as you can see in these works that he kept, the manuscripts, the working through of the songs. And this is really the emphasis of the center here. It's the creativity that might sound obvious, but it's really the focus. You know, we're less interested in, you know, Dylan married so-and-so and then he divorced so-and-so and he had, we leave that out of it. There are plenty of books that cover all those biographical details, but only here at the center can you look at 10 different iterations of the lyrics to Joker Man, for example, a song from 1983. And you really see that creative process. Now that allows us with that focus to bring in something like the Pogues exhibition, because while this is largely about Dylan, we see him as an exemplar of fearless creativity. And so we can look at the work of other artists who, you know, we think walk that same walk. And I think Shay McGowan and the Pogues are a perfect example. And the work, the exhibition on the Pogues, it fits in very comfortably surrounded by the Dylan material. We've had a lot of people come in already, and I think they're sensing that connection. So whether these are diehard Pogues fans, I mean, there was a gentleman here in the gallery yesterday who had made the trip in from Canada, and he was wearing his Pogues concert t-shirt that he's held on to for 35 years. For our opening night, we had visitors in from, you know, Vermont and Montana and all over the place. Similarly, all year long, people come in from all over the world to make the pilgrimage and see the Dylan materials. So it's nice that the center can be this gathering place for fans and for folks who maybe have a more casual understanding or interest. But I think after a couple hours here, they walk away with an enriched sense of who these artists are, and also they might be encouraged to tap into their own creativity.
That's where we're going to leave things off in this episode of the Irish Baseball Podcast. They Gave the Walls a Talking is the name of the exhibit on the Pogues, and it will be showing at the Bob Dylan Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma through May 12th of 2024. The Bob Dylan Center is right next door to the Woody Guthrie Center, and just two blocks away from the home ballpark of the Tulsa Drillers, the AA affiliate of the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm Rick Becker, and this has been episode 85 of the Irish Baseball Podcast.